Good evening, James McKinney here with my Science Hour for August 6, 2020. And the top story of this week has to be the censoring of a team of doctors from around the United States by Google, Facebook, Twitter, social media, where these doctors got together in Washington, had a full-day conference to explain to the American public the reality of this COVID-19 thing, how they are treating effectively with hydroxychloroquine, with in the proper dosage, how the so-called tests that were done by the National Institute of Health to try and show that hydroxychloroquine is harmful, the people were given way over dosages. It was given to people who were near death anyway, and then they say hydroxychloroquine killed them, and these doctors exposed this fraud. And then the main woman who organized this, who is a lead doctor in an emergency room, I think in Texas, I don't remember exactly where she's from, but was fired. She was taken out and fired for her participation in organizing this video. This is just unprecedented. Hydroxychloroquine is a drug that has been used for, they say, 65 years effectively against all kinds of issues. And so it's perfectly safe. There's no reason. The governors of states have blocked people. They've told pharmacists that it's illegal to fill prescriptions. And just their ability to even do this is not there. Since when does a governor of a state have the ability to block doctors from prescribing and having prescription filled to save the lives of these people? Instead, they're being forced on ventilators, which actually kills the people. And so if you don't understand what's going on here, they're doing this to force vaccinations and other things that come from Big Pharma. This is to the point, this is just unbelievable what's going on in the United States. But very clearly, this was meant to disrupt the United States. The United States should never, ever have had to shut down. You find other countries, China shut down for 3 weeks, and they were back and running, and normally you don't even hear about them anymore relative to this issue. There are countries like South Korea, a lot of Latin American countries, where you can get hydroxychloroquine over the counter. You can just go into a store and buy it. In fact, that's true of a lot of prescription drugs in the United States. They're kept on prescription status so that you have to go to a doctor to get them filled, and then they charge these huge, exorbitant prices, especially, the other issue is that they're causing disease and problems in people through vaccinations. And there's no question anymore in my mind at all that vaccinations are causing tremendous damage in the youth of the United States. They're saying that expect 50% of the kids to have autism. An autistic kid will cost, they say, on average, $5.5 million for that kid during his lifetime, because these kids are not going to grow up and at some point become productive adults. This is a condition for a lifetime, and they're getting this when they're babies. And it's very clear that the DPT shot is the one that is causing the babies to die and causing the majority of damage. What happens is the mercury, this is just one of the issues, is that the mercury that's in the shots damages the nervous system. And so I'm one reason I'm mentioning this is I had this past week the misfortune of visiting some people who have a kid that's, 2 years old, and is just bouncing off the walls, uncontrollable, cannot sit in a chair for 2 minutes, is crawling up on the couch, just running around, just out, completely out of control. And this is a kid that is very clearly, in my way of viewing it, vaccine damaged. Because, and this is something that the mercury that goes into the body stays in the body. It doesn't get, the body retains it for life. And so these kids, in varying degrees, are very damaged, and they're just not going to ever recover. So this is the whole vaccination industry, and luckily recently, said Robert Kennedy Jr., the son of Robert Kennedy, was vaccine damaged, and he has brought a case with other people, and they demanded in court that the government and all the government agencies provide the studies that were done to show the efficacy and the safeness of vaccines for kids and vaccines in general. Over the last 30 years, there has not been a single study that shows that the vaccinations even work, and that there is no study showing that they're safe. So the pharmaceutical companies have had a free pass because about 30 years ago, they passed a law protecting pharmaceutical companies from actuary damages. In other words, they could not be sued for damages as a result of their vaccinations. And this was done to protect them during a time of emergency, but they've used it as a carte blanche to prevent any type of activity, so that if kids are damaged, their parents are not allowed to sue them. But the attorneys are starting to get around these cases. But some of these cases can take 10 to 12 years to process. And so during this whole time, the pharmaceutical companies are free to roam, basically. And then they put this pressure on parents through the school systems that everybody has to be vaccinated for fear of little Johnny or little Susie coming in and spreading some kind of disease. Measles was eradicated by just elimination in the United States a long time ago. Measles is a highly contagious disease. I had it when I was little, and now I have lifetime immunity. It's probably one of the things that strengthened my immune system. So there's the belief. In fact, the belief when I was young was that you just, when somebody got the measles, you would get all the kids together, they would play together, and then they would all get it, have it at the same time. It's a couple-week process to get completely over it, and then your body builds up an immune system, and nobody ever died from it. In fact, the statistics are that the death from measles is due to the kids getting vaccinated, not kids getting measles naturally. So it's not this heebie-jeebies, you're going to die thing. It's a disease that kids recover from and build an immune system. And a lot of the diseases, if you don't get them as kids, they are far worse when you are adults. I've seen adults that get certain diseases when they were older, and boy, it's very debilitating, like shingles and other diseases that you get that would have been childhood diseases, like chickenpox or smallpox, things like that. And I had all of them. I had mumps. All of my brothers and sisters and everybody else had them. And all the kids I know, everybody had these. And they got over them and they were fine. And it built their immune system. And now everybody I know is healthy, prosperous adults. Whereas the autism thing started coming in when they started forced vaccinating with 69 vaccinations they give kids, and the list is growing, and now they're going to have a COVID-19 vaccination. And believe me, as soon as they're done with that one, then they're going to go, oh, well, you need a booster. And then you need, oh, well, this year it's going to be a different one, like the flu. This year's variety of COVID-19 is going to be different than those. Oh, this year you need a new COVID-19 shot. Oh, it's never going to end. Whereas the real solution is the vast majority of people have resistance. And so just go back to flu. you know, there's people get the flu, and what happens in the fall? And I used to live in those cold climates, and you know, no sun. You know, around October is the last time you see the sun until, you know, May. And you're cold, and it's in a dry environment, and you don't get fruit and vitamin C, and you're not in the sun, so your body is not producing the various vitamins that come from being in the sun. And about midwinter, about January, February, your body is getting broken down. Its immune system is tragically low. And so that's why all these people get the flu. And so the issue is that, you know, all of these other people that don't get the flu, they have the virus too. And it's just that their immune system is strong enough to where they don't fight it off. So it's a question of immune system, not the issue of getting a virus. So at any rate, I'm not going to go into a lot of details here, but what's important here is that, like, just take hydroxychloroquine. They understand that what this does is this builds up the immune system. And the other things that they give with hydroxychloroquine, it's not just hydroxychloroquine, it's a combination of hydroxychloroquine, zinc, and I'm not going to say it because I mispronounce it, But anyway, that's what they're prescribing. And what it does, they know what it does. It builds up the immune system, and it also prevents the immune system from overreacting. And that's actually what kills people. It's people with a very sensitive immune system. So that's why people with asthma, with other breathing conditions, with pneumonia, with other issues, health issues, they have because of those health issues, they have a very weak immune system, and that's why they're more susceptible to the coronavirus thing. And not just the COVID-19, but any other, like influenza or pneumonia. And that's why older people, a lot of times, they get sick, and then they get pneumonia because their system is weak, their immune system is weak, and they actually die because of pneumonia. But the underlying cause could have been a heart attack, it could have been a falling downstairs, it could have been a lot of things, which puts them in a bed for a while, and then their immune system just gets weak. And of course, the death certificate statistics are completely bogus because they are they're making all these doctors put COVID-19 as the cause of death. Okay, I'm going to switch gears now, and I have many, many topics to cover tonight. The United States is becoming a country kind of like Japan was in back in the old emperor days, the pre-World War II days. Remember when we started World War II, Japan had an emperor, and everybody lived and died for the emperor. But there were 7 historical companies in Japan. And literally everything fell under these 7 companies. So these had been companies that were built up this is kind of like a monopoly game sort of evolutionary track that whether it's capitalism, whether it's a monarchy, whether it's an emperor, whether it's the economic system doesn't really matter, because what happens is companies become conglomerates. They become controlling. They become they have the ability to completely wipe out the competition and then dominate in that field, and then everybody has to work for that company. And we are at that point in the United States right now, where there's probably about 7 companies total that actually operate, if you go up the top of the pyramid, that actually operate just about everything. And a lot of the companies you think are big companies are really smaller pieces of these bigger companies. And so I'm not going to go into an economic analysis right now, but Just for example, one that everybody can relate to is Amazon. Amazon has grown over what maybe a 15-year period. No, not really. More like a 20-some-year period, where it started out, you know, just in the marketplace, to the point now where the majority of retail sales occur through Amazon. And so, how many countless mom-and-pop shops around the country folded because instead of going down to the mom-and-pop shop where you would buy your, you know, radio equipment or your cable or something for a computer or books or shoes or socks or whatever, you would have gone down to some kind of local store. And I remember when I was a kid, the first big store coming into our local town and the economic shuttering that was going on because of everybody would go out to that one location and buy, you know, they offered everything. So you could go to one place, and of course it was new and shiny and bright. And one by one, the local businesses faltered, economic, a little bit of slow turn down, you know. They couldn't stay open. They couldn't pay their help. They couldn't pay for the rent or the heat or all the other expenses that would go along with a brick and mortar building. And one by one, they went out of business. Some of them maintained, but then you had like big store series like Sears, for example. That started out when I was a kid. Sears was a mail order catalog. And they offered all this stuff, and you would order it, and then they would ship it to the local store, and you would go down to this just kind of like a desk counter type of thing with a little warehouse in back, and you'd pick up your bicycle or your, you know, something. And Sears was known for good quality, so that if you bought a bike or a stove or something through Sears, you pretty much could count on it being good quality, or clothes or whatever. And so the Sears and Roebuck catalog was kind of like the Amazon of the day. And they competed quite well against everybody else and probably put out a lot of mom-and-pop shops in the process. But today, the United States is a much bigger country, a much more diverse country. But we still depend on small business to be the backbone of the country. And it's dying. There's just no way. And then with the COVID-19 thing coming, you probably have 100 million Americans affected economically, you know, to the point where they're going to have to try and find some kind of new line of work. But make no mistake, again, the COVID-19 thing was planted time-wise so it would grow, and it was meant to crescendo around October. And so that's why you see these Democratic strongholds trying to keep hanging on to the COVID-19 thing, because the last thing they want is for everybody to be able to go out and vote. The biggest thing they're gunning for right now is mail-in votes, because they know they can stuff the ballot box all over the country with mail-in votes. You don't have any way of tracking who sent in votes. I mean, the mail comes in just big boxes of votes, you know, and since it's anonymous, the vote is without knowing who the person is or identifying them in a mail-in vote. You just have, you know, it's a free-for-all. And so the people who control the local precincts, which is the Democrats, primarily, they have gotten in there, and that's when I did my voter cheating study right after the 26th election. That was the major source of cheating in 10 locations in the United States. Now multiply that by 10, you know, where they control 100 different locations, they can control any election at all. And this is what's been going on in these what they call Democratic strongholds. This has been going on for decades and decades. Okay, so back to the idea that the United States is being controlled by a very few major corporations and funding groups, etc. Anyway, it's the United States Trump is an aberration, whether you like him or hate him, whatever. He's an aberration. And there's really nobody to take his place, is the point. Because, it's just when you had George Bush in there or the Clintons, you had the CIA controlling everything and manipulating everything, the news media, the wars, the, you know, on and on and on. You had a huge machine that actually controlled literally everything going on locally, up to the state level, up to the federal level, and internationally, a coordinated group. And they rained chaos and terror on the entire world, especially third world countries. But it was organized to come off as some kind of America good, everybody else bad. And by the way, that's probably the bigger root of all of the antagonism against white people. It's not some guy that's white down the street, and that's the misdirection going on here. It's the fact that the white group dominated militarily, and you know, all of the wars and all the destruction around the world came from the United States, which is true, but it wasn't the United States. It was the CIA who controlled the presidency and the wars and the news media and the spin and everything else. Okay. Elon Musk, talking about people who are starting to grow and create dominance, Elon Musk, in not just talking about Tesla cars, things like that, but is involved in so many things related to artificial intelligence, the 5G satellites, the the Netlink satellites, and now there's the GPT version 3, which is AI, a level of AI, and Neuralink. Also, there was something that came out this, I think it wasn't really recent, but it was a comment because in a year ago, there was a coup d'etat in Bolivia, little South American country, apparently of no importance to anybody, but of great importance to a few people, including Elon Musk, because they need the lithium on the northern border of Bolivia with Peru. There's a vast salt lake, and one half, a full 50% of the world's lithium supply is in that dry lake bed. And so what they want to do is they want to set up a mega factory there to build lithium ion batteries. And so the Bloomberg came out and said that the future of economics rests on lithium, cobalt, and what's the other, lithium, cobalt, and magnesium, possibly. I forget the third one. But these are the main ingredients in lithium-ion batteries. So the comment was that Elon Musk had orchestrated the coup and all of the news media, of course, that went with it. Well, Elon Musk by himself was not able to do this. It had to be in coordination with the CIA. So a listener wrote in from Brazil, one of my listeners from Brazil, and said that Elon Musk has turned to the dark side, which means basically he's cooperating and working with the CIA, and his success is based on that continued relationship. And I can tell you where that all started. Elon Musk was not getting military contracts for his launches for SpaceX. And so he would put in, you know, the proposals, and he knew that he was competing well cost-wise and the ability to launch, you know, everything he needed, but he wasn't getting the contracts. The good old boy network was getting the contracts. So he sued, he's got enough deep pockets that he sued the federal government and the military to get these contracts. And the day they settled out of court, there was $1 billion investment that came from Google and Fidelity, both CIA-owned operations. And so anyway, that's where Elon signed over basically to the dark side. He got $1 billion into SpaceX, which clearly made him a very much more profitable person. And so he's growing by leaps and bounds. But the thing that's really scary is this artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence is something that's everybody's running around worried about COVID-19, something that much bigger on the horizon, and it's already here, is 5G communications, which is the backbone of AI. It's the ability to communicate on this world network and then also tap into you as an information source. Everything you do, everything you go around and do can be learned in an AI environment, and they can actually learn to become you, to do everything you do and all the work that you do. They even have books and songs being written by AI computers. And so they, the intelligence, the human intelligence that would go into creating music can be duplicated by machines. And this is getting off into really scary land, because now when a person works and then retires, then they expect a pension, some kind of benefit for working for this company for all of these years and decades. But with AI, what they can do is learn your job, replace you, and doggone, they don't have to pay you a pension because you didn't work there. You were duplicated, and your AI counterpart took over your position. Anyway, this is getting goofy. And now I've heard some talks by people who work in AI. This young woman was a PhD. She worked in some research lab. And I can't remember all the details. But then she went and she wanted to work for Neuralink, which is this international neural network of artificial intelligence. And she's talking about all the wonderful things it can do, how it can cure disease. And these people have these pie-in-the-sky ideas of how wonderful it is. And then all of a sudden, you find that these people are off in kind of AI. This is academic never-never land, because these people go off on these tangents, not realizing the damage they're doing to just normal human beings that just want to go to work, make a salary, come home and be with mom and the kids. And vice versa, mom goes out and works, comes home with the kids and has a family. And that's what a lot of people want. And what I find in a lot of cases for people, they're looking for replacements for that because they don't have a family. But make no mistake about it, what's going on in the world is a destruction of the family. By the way, I have posted on my webpage, the jmccsci.com webpage, at the very top, I have a picture of the newly released interior of the Virgin Galactic Spaceship 2 spaceship that I think it carries 6 passengers to go into outer space and come back down. They've already had 2 successful flights. One, they've actually had their first paying customer. Actually, I don't know for sure if it was a paying customer, but they had one person fly already that was not a part of the staff, let's put it that way, of the Virgin Galactic team. And so now they, for $250,000, they can you can buy a ticket to go into space, and people are doing this. They have, I forget what number, like maybe 1,500 people signed up or something. But even at that, I calculated that the money that Branson has put into this is in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So big-time funding. He hawked, what was it, some other one of his holdings. He hawked it, put it into hawk to get the money to uphold the Virgin Galactic business and give it the funding it needed. But it's kind of like there's another good story that's similar to this, the London Eye. The London Eye is a big Ferris wheel, and it's a concept. that came about by some people that thought, wouldn't it be nice to put this major Ferris wheel on the river right off of all of the government buildings in London. And, of course, there was a great deal of opposition, especially from the old guard of England, who thought this was a radical idea and it should be placed somewhere else. But be that as it may, it cost around $65 million. And so British Airways, I think, is the group that came in and funded this and took it from computer drawing to reality. And $29 or something like that, what it cost for a ticket to go on this thing. And before the thing was done and ready to ride, they had already sold a lot of tickets. But it clearly paid itself back because, you know, $29, that was one of the major attractions in London, and it brought a lot of traffic to London, a lot more than people walking around and watching the stuffy old House of Commons building or the, you know, the Parliament building or, you know, whatever in England. But the point is that Branson's money will be well spent because he's going to get back that few hundred million, I mean, at a quarter million a pop. That means for every four people, that's $1 million. And then to cover 400 million, it's 400, that's like 1,600 people. And so, I mean, he's going to make this money back fairly quickly. Let's just put it that way, because there's a lot of people who will pay for that few minutes of actually riding up. And of course, they are weightless, I guess, when you get up to the top and you start falling back down, you're weightless for a number of, I don't know, probably minutes. And so then you can float around the cabin and then come back to your seat, sit down, strap in, and come back for the landing. I think that's very interesting, all the economics that are going on to support this business, to get it up on its feet, but the incredible cost. But the fact that he's commercializing this, and now he's signed a contract with NASA to build an entirely new system that will take people up to the space station, which would compete against, interestingly enough, Elon Musk. But these first people that were able to get into the private space efforts they needed plenty of their own money. That's something that's very important, something that I realize doing the kind of business things that I do. It's important to have money to make these things happen, and finding other people to put that money in is very difficult. Nobody wants to risk their money on your good idea. Just something, Airbus this past week had the first pilotless takeoff. And they're going to get ready to do landings with autopilot, in other words. And so they did the successful takeoff. Apparently it went quite well. And what a pilot has to do is follow the center line down the runway. And a lot of times once you get going pretty fast, you're on a jet, you're going down a runway, and there's wind that's starting to take effect on the airplane as you're going down the runway. The goal is to keep that center tire on the dotted line, the dashed line going down the center of the runway, and until the nose comes up, and then you become airborne. But anyway, it would seem that that would be the future. And by the way, with my own space launch system, which I introduced a number of weeks ago, I actually put it on my webpage. A lot of you probably saw the photographs there. I didn't show the entire system. I just showed three of the artist conception drawings. That will be using also artificial intelligence for takeoff and landing, and will be a pilotless drone system, which is important because it will be to launch space hardware only. And so there won't be any risk of loss of human life if there was a crash or something went wrong. It would be completely automated. Okay, changing gears again. I've been talking for a long time about the building up of public awareness of, this is relative to, say, an asteroid strike or meteor strike on Earth, etc. And what I've started to do is to collect announcements and news articles and internet stories and like this movie Greenland. You can see the trailer. Apparently it's going to be released on August 14th. And this is a blockbuster, supposedly blockbuster Hollywood movie with high-level actors. And it's where Florida supposedly is going to be taken out by an asteroid. And the people are caught up in this, and that's what the movie is about. But my point is that I have predicted a long time ago that NASA and NOAA would join forces for a false flag event. I would put it around October, right before the election. So this is going to be the thing that takes the entire country and throws it into complete chaos. And so that the Democratic, social, liberal, George Soros-funded parties can come in and win the election. So I predicted this, and this is because this election is of paramount importance. They cannot let this election go without winning from top to bottom and take the country over, because being in control is their ultimate goal. So what I started noticing actually months ago when I started making this prediction, what I started noticing was just a constant barrage of space-related stories. And the two that came out this week, interestingly enough, here's one from space.com, came out on the 31st of July, that all of a sudden, remember when Velikovsky said worlds in collision and the astronomy community went crazy? Well, now it's in vogue for papers being published in journals and then filtering down to the public, like Scientific American, etc., where planets will collide. And all of a sudden you have this idea that planets can collide and cause all this tremendous damage. So that just came out. So that's breaking new ground, so to speak, where now it's fashionable to talk about planets colliding. And of course, back in the Nibiru Planet X days, that was taboo, but now it's fashionable. Okay, so then the other one is that here's a story that came out of spaceweather.com. Thank you. Somebody, a listener, wrote in on this one, and I cannot be everywhere on the internet. I don't have time to go out and scour the internet for all of these stories. So if you see one, please send it in. Go to my webpage. There's an email address there. Send it in. Okay, so then this story came from spaceweather.com that back in 1903, there was a big kind of Harrington event type of solar flare that hit Earth and caused some significant effects, but it happened during a solar minimum. Well, right now we're in a solar minimum, so the whole point of the article was, hey, don't let your guard down. Big solar flares can happen at a solar minimum. Isn't that interesting? And so the point is that they're priming the pump. They're putting this information out in these major outlets where people read these, and of course, it's what's it putting in their brain? It's kind of like when the Space Shuttle Challenger blew up with the teacher and all the students looking at it. Make no mistake about it, that was designed so that every student in the United States got the same message. Wow, space is dangerous. Only NASA can go there, and even for them it's dangerous. We can't go into outer space. That was the message that was sent. So all of this subliminal building is going to crescendo, and there's even people predicting that there's going to be a planet Nibiru, which... that's, of course, bogus. coming in October. And all of this is being headed into this month of October, right before the national election. As they want complete chaos, they want the cities burning. I bet you $1 million that the George Floyd trials of the police officers comes right before then, and they're going to let those guys off lock, stock, and barrel. They're going to say, nope, they weren't guilty of anything, and that's going to cause massive rioting in the United States. This is all coming right before the November 3rd election. It's all being timed so that all of these massive chaos factors come together at the exact same time. So anyway, I will keep you updated on these as they come in. And like I say, if you see an article related to, say, asteroids going to hit Earth or a new movie coming out or, solar flares during solar minimum or anything related to this kind of event, then please send it in. I'll put it on my list here and keep track of these things. I wasn't as diligent as I possibly should have been, but now I've created a list, and I'm keeping all of these stories because this is just becoming overwhelming. And you'll see, mark my words, that NASA and NOAA have something cooked up. And it's with this last article, I would say it's really crystallizing that there will be a false flag, and this is the scenario that I predict, that it'll be a false flag where NASA will say there's a big solar flare, everybody get ready, they will have all the fake data of the big solar flare, it will be announced every place, and then NOAA will say, oh yes, all of this weather, all of this big weather is being caused by this solar flare, and then there will be manipulated weather. There will be outages of electric grid systems, which will throw all of the mailing, They will throw all of the voting into total chaos. And then all of a sudden, they'll come out the other side and they'll go, Joe Biden won, or whatever happens there, whatever craziness happens there. And then all of a sudden, now all of the insanity will begin because they will be in control. Okay, anyway, I'll keep you posted, apprised of that type of thing. By the way, I was talking about lithium. Here's a note in my show notes here, where Argentina, Chile, and Bolivia contain the majority of the lithium in the world, those three places. So expect a lot of activity there, but imagine this. And this could happen any day now. Lithium is the primary source of batteries right now. But imagine a graphene superconductor battery that somebody develops in a laboratory all of a sudden becomes inexpensive to produce and made of carbon, which is immensely available, a very cheap source, etc. But what if somebody came along with a carbon-based battery or some other kind of battery, some other technology that did not include lithium, then all of a sudden, all of this insanity of Evo Morales being forced out of his office and, the international media going in there and saying that there was fraud in the election when the really international groups went in and examined this and showed that there was no fraud. So he should have been in the driver's seat of Bolivia and was forced out. He had to leave to Mexico. They were going to kill him. They were going to kill him and his family. And then this other group just takes over. It's like what happened in Brazil and other places around the world where they completely just go in and take over a government. It happened in the Ukraine. All over resource grabbing. By the way, I just have another note here. Of course, there's this big fight going on over vaccination for COVID-19 versus the hydroxychloroquine, which is a very inexpensive, very effective drug against COVID-19. Here's a term that I heard for the first time. Maybe you've heard it before, but it's called vaccine hesitancy. In other words, this is referring to, instead of saying anti-vaxxers, they're just saying that, oh, you're just hesitant to take. Vaccine hesitancy. So that's the new buzzword. And I mean, who sits around and dreams up these terms that, oh, you're just a little hesitant and you can be coaxed? And they actually had an article on CNN with the 7 ways to deal with someone that you know who has vaccine hesitancy and how you should talk to them. You should coddle them and understand their position. But in the end, they're wrong and they should be vaccinated. Oh, my goodness. This thing is getting really wacko, really psychologically wacko. And woof. Anyway, I have a quick mention here about education. Because of the coronavirus deal, the schools closed. And the question is, should parents pay for schooling that they didn't get, that their kids didn't get? This is all the way from kindergarten to grade school. And, of course, the kids went home and there were some online courses that they would take, things like that. But the reality is they didn't get value, whether you paid for this grade school, high school, through your, say, 50% of your real estate taxes, which is typical. That's how they pay for the schools. Or that you paid directly to a college or university. The students are coming back and saying, hey, I didn't get my value. Give me my money back. And so that's a very interesting thing. So parents are actually suing colleges for trying to pawn off this, remote learning as equivalent to being on campus where the professor was there. And people are saying, hey, give me my money back. I didn't get my product. It's like, like the airlines. Good example where if you didn't get your trip, the airlines had to cancel the trip. They got to give you your money back. You didn't get the product. And so my recommendation is, yeah, that these colleges and universities should feel the hit on this instead of just getting money, more money. They're keeping kids' money for tuition, etc. And, you didn't get a product. So you should get your money back. You should get a refund. Or in the case of, like I say, high school, grade school, or people who live in these communities, why is the school getting this money? They didn't produce a product. They didn't produce education. And then that brings up to the point in the fall, they're going to expect everybody to pay for the schools and the unions are going to want their money, but they're not producing anything. There's no product there. And by the way, my feeling too is that it would be really good to flush out the unions, it's no longer education, it's about the unions. And also that the real question is, should people be sending their kids back to these institutions of so-called higher learning? And really, the kids are not learning. They're not learning to be kids and real people. They're pawning off some, reading, writing, arithmetic, the 3 R's. It's funny because only one of those begins with R. The other two begin with W and A. Reading, writing begins with W. So I always found that funny that the 3 R's were not 3 R's. But this education is scam. And I would love to see a lot of these fat, overpaid professors out on the street, where they'd have to get a real job. None of these people have ever had a real job. They've floated through the university system. They went to high school, maybe got good grades. They went off to college. They learned how to pass tests. That's what it is. It's how well can you pass a test and repeat what the professor says, and then you're the darling student of the professor because you answered all the questions that he said, right, or she said. And, and that's education. That's what they call education anyway. When I was at Cornell, it was pathetic. These kids were paying, this is 1979 to 81, they were paying $65,000 a year for tuition, at that time, and I'll tell you, it was pretty pathetic. I got a much better education, it's my small private school education, than I ever saw undergrad at Cornell. It was really pathetic. And, you know, I was in those classrooms with 395 students in a calculus class. You couldn't even see the guy in the top row. Education has become a monster. And one of the good things is maybe a lot of these institutions will have to shut down or at least rethink what they're doing and what they're providing as a product. Because at the end of the day, if all the paperwork is in the file and the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, the A's and the B's and the C's are given, then it's successful education, not realizing the damage that they're actually doing. And so I just want to remind people that in my paid cast, I'm in the middle of the educational program, 100 shows, 100 weeks, and right now, and it's in about week 50, about halfway through of the 100 program series, and it's very extensive. So I'd encourage people to go there, or also my Patreon channel. You can find the links to all of this on my webpage, jmccsci.com. Okay, just a quick mention. This came up on the John Moore Show yesterday, and I want to repeat it because it's fairly important. My filter elements, we put silver in the filter elements, and that's to prevent bacteria and growth of all kinds of things. A lot of people aren't aware that silverware, the knife, fork, and spoon that you commonly use at the table, was made out of silver, out of all the different metals that you could use, steel or, you know, aluminum or other, you know, even plastic today, knife, fork, and spoon. They used silver traditionally because it prevented the spread of bacteria. It was just a natural agent that bacteria and viruses could not live on silver. The people would take a silver coin when there used to be silver coins, and they would throw it in a container of milk as a way of preventing disease from developing in the milk. Right now, the use of silver is something that I would think potentially would be available. Dr. Len Horowitz sells a product that is oxygenated silver, and I think it's the only thing he sells, and he also makes the claim that this is effective against coronavirus, which I don't have the scientific information on that to say that that's true or not true. You'd have to go to his information to see what the data is on that. But the point is that here's how silver is the most effective. You take in a vacuum chamber, you vaporize silver. So you take solid silver, you vaporize it, and then you put in oxygen. And what the oxygen does is picked up the silver atoms, and when this combination, this oxygenated silver, gets into your body, it's at the atomic level. The body sees the oxygen, pulls the oxygen, and that goes into the cells, and that's where the silver is released, and silver is highly toxic to viruses. It's not toxic to the human being. And so anyway, that's what they do. That's the process, or at least one of the processes. I used to sell a product called Super Silver, and that's what it was. It was this, and this is not colloidal silver, by the way. Colloidal silver is where they make a super fine powder by grinding silver up. That is not atomic grade silver. And people claim that colloidal silver does things. I don't personally have information that colloidal silver does anything, but the form of silver that is useful to the human body is at the atomic level. Okay, so enough of that. And I don't, this silver, the super silver that I used to sell, was available over the counter. It was not something that was like pharmaceutical grade or whatever, and people would take it. And the reason it was originally developed was in burn units. It was used, and what they realized is this helped burn victims regain their skin tissue, etc., much more rapidly. So that's where it was originally used, and then they started noticing all of these other uses for silver, including the control of bacteria, etc. And so anyway, just a quick commentary on silver. Okay, I want to spend the last couple minutes talking about autism. And as I mentioned before, I had the misfortune this week of being visiting some friends who had a kid that's autistic, 2 years old, just literally bouncing off the walls. And this I attribute myself to vaccination damage. This is the issue that what happens, apparently, there's probably more things that happen, but the mercury that's in the shots is a deadly poison, and it affects the nervous system, and especially in little kids. So what happens is their wires are all crossed, basically, and they're just little, you know, out of control nervous systems just firing, and they're running around, jumping on furniture, moving around, cannot sit still, can't eat. And the cost to a parent of an autistic child is something like $5.5 million, which is absolutely, you know, devastating. But they're saying that 50% of the kids in the United States have some level of autism. And I would say that you could make a case for 100% of them have effects of some kind. And so anyway, and this is the result of the vaccinations. It's becoming very clear. The SIDS, the sudden infant death syndrome, where the babies die under 6 months of age, is because they're getting the DPT shot. That appears to be the one that's targeting the kids and killing them. And of course, the doctors are out there vaccinating these kids. You know, and 60% of the kids that die of sudden infant death syndrome had just had their DPT shot. So there's, the statistics are very clear. This is not, you know, this is not imaginary. These kids are actually dying from this. Some of the worst cases, of course, where the kids die, but there's, you know, tens of millions of kids who are vaccine damaged right out of the chute. They don't have a chance at a normal life because of vaccination. So this is something that's got to come to a head, because this has to stop, this insanity of vaccinations. And there's no proof that they even work. There are no tests. As Anthony Fauci says, double blind test. They don't double blind test anything that's pharmaceutically economically gainful to the big pharma institutes. And I'm out of time. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.